I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Kaylin.
And you are tuning into Sociologic here on CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from the very top of Burnaby Mountain.
We're stoked to be your host for the next hour, exploring local and global events using sociological perspectives. Thanks for tuning in.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Sociologic here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, where we are located on the ancestral and unceded homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish speaking people. You can tune in via our website at cjsf.ca or via our radio app, which you can download from the app. Apple Store or Google Play Store?
I think
mind
both.
Blip. Boop. Blip, blip. My brain is fried currently. But welcome. I am Rebecca and I'm going to be your host for the next hour up to 8 p.m. For the beginning part, I am going to be joined by DJ Coco, aka Corey.
My real name.
Her real name. We don't do DJ names on social
media. Oh, no, apparently. No DJ name.
From Slumber Party in the previous hour. So yeah, I hope everyone is having a great evening, or as I like to say, a great start to your day, middle of the day, wherever you are tuning in from or listening this, whenever you're listening to this, if you're not listening to it live and you listen to it recorded. Yeah, tonight I have shockingly a kind of another dark topic, so I'm gonna, this has become a regular, I'm gonna put a trigger warning in. I am gonna be talking, not in detail, but I'm gonna be talking a bit about rape and serious sexual offence trials, so RASO trials. I know Corey and I touched upon this when we did our 2-hour special a couple weeks ago, where we looked at specifically judge-only versus jury decision-making in relation to the Canadian hockey case. I'm going to just talk a bit more about the solutions to the pitfalls with jury decision-making in this case type, explain a bit about what rape myths are. They're a big kind of issue within this sector. And talk a bit about just how important and significant this is in our current setting. If you look at the rise in not only sexual violence, but gender-based violence. And if you want to know more, I talk about this a lot on Intravenous. So you will definitely be able to find some episodes of me speaking more about this with some experts in the field who are definitely a lot more well-versed than myself. So yeah, that's going to be tonight's topic. If that is going to trigger you in any way, shape or form, please, please tune out. You can tune back in at 8 p.m., which I have been assured by Connor is a much more lighthearted and fun section compared to mine. He's got a really cool interview that he is going to be playing and some really cool music on Bitcoover, 8 to 10 p.m., so yeah, you couldn't always put in another Sociologic episode. There are some non-dark ones, I promise, on the website. May have to scroll down a little bit, but there are some. So yeah, and as I like to start off every show, I like to do a what has made me joyous or happy this past week, and I usually do it with DJ Coco, although she abandoned me last week to
I'm
do
sorry.
It. I had to do it alone. Very upsetting for me, but I hope you guys all enjoyed it. I encourage you all to think about something whilst we speak that you've been joyous about and that's brought you joy and happiness, because I think people should focus on it more, on what went well in the week, instead of being like, oh, this week was so long and Monday sucked because of work. Let's focus on what brings us a bit of happiness, especially with the current state globally, which the news is just a sad thing to open at the moment. Do you want to start DJ Coco or?
Oh, Corey, we'll start off.
DJ Coco. Corey.
DJ Coco /Corey.
If you want to start.
I will start. I currently am on co-op at a local hospital. So as part of the hospital, there's a floor for the staff. It is a staff patio. So we have little planter boxes for some of the departments, and our department has a planter box, which I've been taking care of and gardening. So we have lots of tomatoes growing, peas growing, etc. And this week we have a little Thai basil that has been doing pretty poorly the past while. And this week it decided to actually grow, and it is looking beautiful right now and smells amazing. So I was very happy about kind of revitalizing the Thai basil. So that was really nice.
That's so cool. That feels so therapeutic.
Oh, and satisfying.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Very therapeutic. I can imagine.
Ugh. It feels, that feels like, oh, just like zen, relaxing.
Oh, yes.
My God.
I think gardening is the new hobby.
The new hobby? Oh, yeah. Oh, I love that.
Me and the 80-year-olds. Us and the 80-year-olds.
As you should, though. As you should. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds nice. Yes. Very peaceful, especially after hectic. You had a hectic weekend. It was... conference.
Oh, you as well.
Highland Games. Yeah, but I feel like, I don't know, because like I'm gonna say what I was grateful for this past weekend was getting to go to the conference in Nanaimo, because I got to explore a bit of Nanaimo. I got to see Robin, who was the program coordinator here, but she left back in March. So it was nice to see Robin again, because it's the last time I'm gonna see Robin before I leave. So it was very nice to be able to speak to her, and also it was just a very interesting experience. I learned a lot from the conference about community radio, and you could really feel the passion in the room from everybody. And that atmosphere to me was just like so electric.
It was inspiring. I felt like my fingers were tingling, the hair was sticking out my body when everyone was passionately shouting into the air at some point.
Yeah. And so it was just a very cool experience getting to see a couple, like meet new people, getting to see people for the last time before I go, and then also exploring a part of Vancouver Island and BC that I'd not seen. So, you know, I'm all about exploring the new places in BC. I'm more BC worldly known than Corey over.
Oh, 100%. This woman has been to so many more places than me, and I'm born here, so.
But that's always the way. But yeah, that I think as well, like, the atmosphere, it was just good vibes, despite the crime.
I mentioned it a little bit on Slumber Party, where kind of when I talked about the conference. I was going to say this as my joy, but I've already... mentioned it before, but yeah, the crime, we don't talk about the crime in
the
Nanaimo.
Crime in Nanaimo was an interesting experience that we had, but I'll say listen to Slumber Party if you want to get the details on that.
Yes.
But yeah, it was just, I don't know, the aside from the conference as well, the vibes were just really cool. Like, even like you, me, and Connor, the music coordinator here, just sitting and doing crosswords in the evening chatting. Like, it was just a nice atmosphere, nice vibes,
that
nice conversations.
Was perfect night for me. Yeah. Just crosswords, chicken wings.
Crosswords. Crosswords.
The crosswords. It is getting too late. The crosswords. I had some pretty bad chicken wings, but we found some fries in the Airbnb, so...
Yeah, it was just a great... To me, it was kind of... That was, like, the catalyst to, like, the run-up of me finishing up my time here. Mm-hmm. Because, in case any of you are unaware, this is my last week at the radio in the capacity that I am. Sociologic is continuing for, like, another 2 weeks after this week. Because I don't leave the country until mid-July. But this is, like, my last week at the station hosting Intravenous... live and just being at the station. So that conference, I'm so happy of the atmosphere that was there, because it was a nice like lead into my final week, and then that leads into 2 weeks of traveling with my friend around Vancouver, which then leads into me going home. So just, I don't know, it was a really nice chilled out, good vibes. I can't reiterate it enough, good vibes. Sudokuing, crosswording. Never failed to be impressed by Connor's crossword skills.
Oh my gosh. We both felt so, so like imbeciles after he do every single word. We're like, ooh.
That makes
totally
so much sense.
Makes so much sense. But we did do, how many cross?
We did seven, I think, total.
Dang.
Six or seven across the weekend, because I bought a lot. They're from The Peak, the newspaper here at SFU. And I bought some, they're usually on a stack on the table in the radio. And so I took a couple, well, a couple, I took six or seven with me. And we did them on the ferry there, we did them there, we did them on the ferry back. And we crushed it on the ferry back. On the ferry, ferry back. Do you know what? It's like Connor trained us that evening. We crushed it after that.
We didn't even do anything. I don't think we went up on the deck. We were just doing crosswords for 2 hours straight.
And we even got Danny to.
Oh, Danny. We were all just frantically writing in the boxes and.
Yeah.
Consulting with each other. It was great. Mm-hmm. That was the best kind of ferry ride I'd want to be on.
Yeah. So, yeah, in a long-winded way, that was the what brought me and Corey joy this past week / weekend. I hope you all had something that brought you joy. No worries if not, but even if it's something small, like you took a really great nap. Mm-hmm. That's sometimes a really amazing thing. And yeah, before we like hop straight into this topic, I'm going to start off with some music because I don't want this to be a super dark and sad episode. Well, not sad, but it's an important topic, but it's not everyone's favorite topic to discuss.
It's a heavy one.
Yeah, it's a heavy one. That's a good way of describing it, especially 7 p.m. on a Tuesday. So I'm going to be slotting in a lot of music here and there. So hopefully you get some, I don't know, relaxing joy out of it as well. I want this show to cater to everyone. And I'm going to start with a song that actually, shout out to Connor for recommending it to me because I listened to it probably about half an hour ago, loved it. So I'm going to play it. It was actually for Intravenous, but I've put it in for my show today. So this is the song Welcome Back to Me by Cumulus, I want to say is how you pronounce it. And it's off of the album We've Got It All. It's the kind of indie folk, indie rock, femcon song. And yeah, I really like it. And I think it's a good way of easing into the topic as a kind of, I guess, slower start. So yeah, that will be the song. And then I'll be back talking about rape and serious sexual offenses. Yay!
Yay!
Welcome back to me. Welcome. The Art of the Mixtape is not lost. Tune in to the Vancouver Mixtape for your own personal mix of Vancouver's best independent music, interviews, and more. Join me, Jesse, and my co-host Jamie on our trek through Vancouver's underground, Sunday nights at 8 o'clock on CJSF.
Welcome back to Sociologic here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, where I'm going to be your host up until 8 p.m. My name is Rebecca, in case you didn't know. And I'm going to be talking about rape and serious sexual offense trials. So, yes, it's going to be sort of a heavy topic. If you would like to tune out and tune back in at 8 p.m. for Bitcoover with our music coordinator, Connor, if that is not something that will be good for your soul and your mind. But the song before that we heard was called Welcome Back to Me by Cumulus. I really hope I'm pronouncing that right. Off of the album We've Got It All. And to jump right in, I am going to first give a bit of background info on what the issue is, on why I want to talk about rape and serious sexual offense trials, which is shortened to just RASO. So I'm going to just say RASO trials, and that's what I mean. But the issue is to address whether jurors can effectively complete their role in being an impartial and unbiased body. Because there have been studies over the past 40 years investigating various forms of bias occurring within jury decision making, particularly when it comes to RASO trials. So a lot of evidence has started to begin to highlight the detrimental impact that societal misconceptions, stereotypes towards sexual violence are having on jury decision making. And these misconceptions are usually grouped together and called rape myths. And a scholar, I guess is how I describe her. A scholar, Martha Burt, kind of defined that, was like the first person to define this in around 1980, and defined it as prejudicial, stereotyped and false beliefs about rape victims and rapists. And typically rape myths, they are utilized to undermine the severity and authenticity of a complainant's allegation and excusing the behavior of the accused. They're not exclusively applied to male on female rape. They are applied to all rapes, so such as male on male rape. It's just that the most publicized and well and most known, I guess, is male on female rape. And I did an interview with the CEO of a registered charity in England and Wales called Justices Now for Intravenous. So if you'd like to listen to that interview in depth, you can check it out on the Intravenous playlist. I'm airing part two tomorrow, so part one was last week. But they have a section talking about rape myths and kind of debunking the rape myths that was in collaboration with a professor of mine from my university, Dr. Dominic Wilmot. And I thought I'd talk about a few of them because I think a lot of people will understand it when they hear it, but they don't realize it's a rape myth. And there's a whole, I guess, section of this, a whole problem, a whole massive issue around it. So I would say a very common one that I've definitely heard is that women who dress in revealing clothing provoke rape. That is the rape myth. The reality is, anyone can be a victim to rape. It has absolutely nothing to do with their appearance, their clothing, anything. So women who dress in revealing clothing to provoke rape is absolutely not true. Another really common one that I've heard is if someone has drunk a lot of alcohol or taken drugs, they are responsible for being raped. They need to take responsibility for it because they put themselves in the situation. Drinking or drug taking is never an invitation to rape, and if they are incapacitated by alcohol or drugs, they actually cannot consent to sex anyway by law in England and Wales and in Canada. I double checked. So this idea that people are responsible and need to take accountability for their actions, well, not their actions, for what happened to them, because they were on a night out drinking or they took drugs and things like that, is completely not true. Just if you were drinking and taking drugs, you automatically do not have informed consent. You cannot give informed consent. Therefore, it is illegal. So yeah, another really common one is a genuine victim will scream and fight back. Rape will leave visible injuries such as bruises. Now, screaming and fighting back, there are instinctive and automatic responses to fear, and it's not a universal reaction. And actually, the most common common reaction would be to freeze, not to scream and fight back. So that's also completely not true. And a tool often used by rapists is actually manipulation and coercion to force them into having sex, and that won't necessarily be leaving visible marks. So this rape myth that you have to have visible injuries such as bruises, cuts, things like that to be a rape victim, again, simply not true. When you look at the reality behind it, another being that false rape accusations are common, as women want to lie to get attention or revenge, or they regret having consensual sex, so they lie about being raped. Most survivors do not even report their rape to the police. So false reporting will be extremely rare. Additionally, men are actually more likely to be raped than they are to be falsely accused of rape. That's how rare false accusations are. But yet that is invoked a lot during these trials as a kind of justification to get for a not guilty verdict, is that false rape accusations happen all the time. Women are liars, and things like that, which again, if you look at the statistics, and the statistics, like, I'm not saying hold all your weight on the statistics, because the statistics don't even cover the whole picture anyway. We know this on Hidden Figure of Crime, the Dark Figure of Crime, that police recorded statistics do not provide an accurate picture of the amount of crime going on. But it is very, very rare for false rape accusations to happen. They do happen, but it is very, very rare. There is a conception that if she didn't say no, or if he didn't say no, then it wasn't rape. This comes under, a miseducation in consent. Not saying no is not the same as giving their consent. If someone seems unsure, if someone is staying quiet, if someone moves away or they don't respond, that is not them saying yes. That is not them giving consent. Just because they haven't said the word no does not mean they have given consent. And there is a really big miseducation, misinformation, I think, around consent and what consent means, which I personally do think has to be addressed in some way, probably in education earlier on, for young people, on what consent entails and how. Consent is a complex term. It's multifaceted. There's so many different aspects to consent. Another rape myth being most rapes are carried out by a stranger. The reality, around 90% of rapes are committed by someone known to the victim. So rape is rape, whether it is your wife, your boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, your, I don't know, friend's uncle, friend's aunt, things like that, anyone that's known to you. It doesn't matter. Rape is rape. Most rapes are not actually carried out by strangers. It's more likely someone that has access to you in your personal spaces and is in your personal life and circle. So those are just a handful of rape myths and the debunking of them. I would strongly recommend checking out the Justice Is Now website. I believe the URL is justiceisnow.org. They have a whole video with my professor going through rape myths, different examples, debunking them. And I think it's a really great video, great resource in explaining the misconceptions and highlighting the misconceptions that you hear about in your day-to-day lives almost. Because I will think back to when I was in secondary school and I would hear comments made about, oh, your skirt's too short and you need to be careful, it's not appropriate for school, we have male teachers here. And even though that's not in the context of rape or serious sexual offences, it is following that pattern. It's putting the blame on the, in this case, the girl, for a man's urges and a man's actions. And so seeing it in the formative years of secondary school, high school education in a different context, it's filtering its way through. And you see it then in rape myths, where it's reaching the severity that is rape and serious sexual offences. So that is the background to what this problem is, looking at rape myths and how they can influence a jury when it comes to deciding a verdict. And there have been different possible solutions. If you want to know more about kind of delving into the problem and how it affects the criminal justice system as a whole, not just jury decision making, I would strongly recommend checking out Intravenous episodes that are coming out, that have been coming out since last week, but it will be coming out for the next couple of weeks. I've done a lot of really great, interesting interviews with experts in the field talking about this, but I just wanted to highlight the problem, to highlight potential solutions that are being kind of discussed around scholars and policymakers in England and Wales, and what could potentially be implemented elsewhere with areas of similar judicial structures like Canada. So the first one being jury screening and a gradation scheme. I believe it's pronounced gradation. But this jury screening idea is basically a subtle, psychometrically validated rape myth questionnaire. And it will be routine screening procedures for jurors where they would fill out this questionnaire and you would get a score. And it would use measurement tools to kind of help identify and filter out jurors that score high in problematic attitudes. So this will attempt to remove any really biased jurors from rape trials altogether before they're selected to be a juror in a RASO trial. This doesn't mean that they can't be a juror, though, because as we know, being selected to be on a jury, you have to do it at some point if you are selected. So they could still be a juror for another case type, but it's just that they are scoring high in problematic attitudes for rape and serious sexual offence trials. So to take them out of any trials in that category, you'll never completely get an unbiased jury, as I've been discussing with different people. And I've discussed in different contexts here on Sociologic about whether we can ever be without a bias or without an influence. So it's unrealistic to think that you will ever get a completely unbiased jury, but it's about, this kind of solution is about limiting that bias and the effect of that bias. And the gradation scheme, it will be like implemented alongside it, using different terminology and legal definitions for different types of rape. However, this kind of has more, I would guess, very valid concerns, because it could undermine the severity of what remains an offence of rape, because it would be introducing, for example, non-consensual penetrative sexual activity. And with research that we found, due to jurors leaning to not convicting despite a belief of the defendant being guilty because of the potential sentencing that may be applied, or misconceptions over what is a real rape, that this could undermine the severity of a rape case by categorizing it in different areas and using different terminology. So that one's got a bit more of criticism and concern around it. And then another kind of area of a possible solution is juror education or juror training. Now, this actually is a preferred option among most researchers and policymakers, because it is the least disruptive that's been displayed or been suggested. It would most likely involve pre-trial training or in-trial juror education via extended judicial directions, via expert evidence regarding the existence and influence of rape myths and the impact that has on juror judgment and decisions. So this could be like informational videos, or it could be other forms, like other mediums of education. And it can be delivered once or at multiple points throughout the trial to hopefully set aside bias as effectively as possible. Now, I am pretty sure I have mentioned previously that I have done jury service. I was a juror in 2024 before I came to Vancouver, and I